Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
All right, we're still waiting for the Broncos to go up and step up to a microphone. We'll just drop here just a couple minutes. No biggie. Did a move that John Elway didn't make not get enough credit? Remember when John Elway said, quote, "We'll take a look at it," end quote, when talking about paying Philip Lindsay? Well, he didn't. And that decision to not pay Philip Lindsay has actually aged very well. Now, this is sort of an under-the-radar conversation that comes back up on the radar because Phil Lindsay signed with the Indianapolis Colts, who are on the Broncos' schedule week 5.
Thursday night here in Denver. I think it was a very good move on the part of John Elway not to re-sign Philip Lindsay. He's turned into a journeyman running back whose value would have been inflated by the back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons that he had to start his career here in Denver. Was he ever an elite back? No. Would he have ever put up those kind of numbers somewhere else where he didn't get the chance because he's the hometown hero and that played into a little bit of it? Well, clearly not. This is now his third spot. He was in Houston, he was in Miami, and now he's in Indianapolis. So to give a journeyman back that kind of money would have been a mistake. The Broncos are much better off with Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon. Much better off. I think that's it's hard to argue.
Well, it's I don't think it's arguable.
No.
I mean, it's sort of aged the way it's aged. Now, I will say this. Philip Lindsay, you kind of mixed in the hometown hero thing as a reason why he was given opportunities. He played really well that first year. James, he averaged 5.4 yards per carry.
Well, I mean, it's the you know, whole thing of like connections. Somebody gets in, you know somebody who knows somebody, and that opens the door. It's a matter of, well, do you take advantage of it? And he did, but he got the opportunity he got in part because he was the fan favorite. Like, that does play a role in things. That's a prime example of it, because down in Houston, down in Miami, and I'm guessing that's how it's going to go in Indianapolis. I don't think he's going to beat out my guy JT. That opportunity just didn't arise.
My guy JT.
Those opportunities didn't arise because he's not a fan favorite. He's not the hometown hero. Now, when he was given that opportunity, he did take advantage of it. I will give you that.
He was the best running back on the roster at the time. It was Devontae Booker. It was sure. Royce Freeman.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, he brought a little bit of a different dynamic, and he ran hard and he played hard. Plus, it was a team that was just, I mean, talk about that was in the midst of the bad and boring Broncos, right? That 5-6 year stretch where they were bad and boring. And he was an energetic guy who always played hard, and that just made him jump out even more because he was, you know, he was color paint up on a white wall. Like, oh my gosh, that just seems so bright and, you know, festive. That's what he was. That's what he was.
Will he be on the field against the Broncos week 5?
No. I don't think so.
Probably take an injury. It'd probably take an injury because they have a secondary change of pace back in Nyheim Hines.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It would take something that, you know, would get him on the field that's other than, hey, he went out. He's not going to beat out Jonathan Taylor. He's not going to beat out Hines. He's just not. So
and he's got to make the football team first.
Right, right. So I think we'll see him on the field in Denver? No, I don't. Now, will I be absolutely shocked? I won't be shocked, but I'll be mildly surprised if he sees time in that. I'm not rooting against him. I'm just being realistic.
Thanks to our listeners in Castle Rock for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. You know, I brought this up yesterday because our producer, Dante, wasn't living in Denver at the time and is still, like, you know, gaining Broncos context. Just how big of a story Philip Lindsay was that 2018 season. He was the biggest story in Denver sports.
In 2018, he was the biggest story in Denver sports?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a big deal because he was the hometown guy and he rushed for 1,000 yards.
I mean, it was like, if there was an opportunity to put Philip Lindsay up on TV, our hometown stations were doing it. If there was an opportunity for us to talk about Philip Lindsay, we were doing it.
Well, and it was every week during the broadcast. It was, he went to school up the road. And,
and he's from Denver.
Boulder, and he's from Denver. It's like, yeah, we all know. We've heard it now 16 times. It was a big story. I think that was the Rockies were like going to back-to-back playoffs as the second consecutive year.
Yeah, but you're comparing a hometown Denver Bronco to the Colorado Rockies.
Nolan was going, 1-for-18 in the postseason.
Oof.
So whatever the numbers were.
He had 200.
It was a big story. It was definitely a big story. And he played really, really well during his opportunity.
Remember he had that 137-yard game against the Bengals?
Yep.
That was after he had already had like a couple 100-yard games, 95-yard games.
That was the game that got him to 6-6, right? And Emmanuel got hurt. I think Chris Harris Jr. got hurt in that game. Emmanuel got hurt that week in practice, or I may have it.
No, you're reversed. Right, because they got to 6-6.
And then they lost out.
But we were saying, last year they were 5-11 in the 2017 season. And we said, because we looked at the schedule at the time and was like, it sounds absurd now.
It was Niners.
Dude, it was Cleveland. The Niners who like had like the top pick. It was a 2-14 Niners that year.
I feel
year.
Like Nick Mullins was playing quarterback for them.
Yes. Because we looked at the schedule and said, they just got to 6-6. They had won three games in a row. They beat the Chargers on the road. They beat the Steelers at home. Then they went on the road and beat Cincinnati. And it wasn't 137. It was 157 on the ground. He was like leading SportsCenter.
He had the long touchdown run on the pitch to the left.
He did. And then we looked at the schedule. And you know who it was? The 2-14 Niners. The Browns, who I think went on to have the number one pick.
Yep.
The Raiders. And the Chargers. And we said, we think the Broncos are going to be favored in all those games.
VJ is going to be coach of the year.
That's what the we had a segment on it. We said if the Broncos went out, that would mean they would have won their last seven in a row and doubled their win total year over year. It was a forecast. It was a like if this happens, could we see Vance Joseph, who this town mostly hates, be coach of the year?
Well, you can look back at this season, similar situation, right? Weren't they 7-7 and the Bengals were 7-7?
They were 7-6.
Oh, 7-6. Okay, so
as Stokely reminds us, with Teddy Bridgewater, the Broncos were 7-6.
Right, that's right. Right in the same wheelhouse, and it went the same way it did that year, and the head coach got ousted. But the Bengals were also sitting there 7-6 this year, and it went the opposite direction for them.
Dude.
And they wound up in the Super Bowl.
Who could have seen that? They came here. It was a coin flip spread. The final score was 15-10. The Broncos lose, and I remember we were using the little calculator on if you win the game, because you can go to 538.com, a probability website, and you can just click W. And the Broncos' playoff chances went from 20 to 35% if they won, and it went from 20 to like 7% because they lost.
Drew came into that game in relief, led the Broncos to a go-ahead touchdown, and then Vic Fangio's defense gave it up in two plays. And then Drew got him down there again. He had a shot in the red zone to give him the lead again late.
I don't know too many guys
that
are...
And he made that bad play with that fumble. I'm saying it was a bad play.
Okay.
But he got him there.
I don't know too many guys that are both pro-Paxton and pro-Drew the way that you guys are, or the way that you are.
No, I'm not pro-Paxton. I'm pro you should have played your first-round draft pick. That's all I am.
All right.
It is a very small club. When we meet, we don't need a lot of space.
Yes. Okay. All right. The Broncos are getting their off-season work. Several Broncos are stepping up to the microphone. They're already there now. We'll eavesdrop on one of those conversations coming up next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
All right, Albert Okwuegbunam is going to step up to the mic here any second. We were just talking about during the commercial break, some of these matchups in the NBA playoffs. The Celtics dropped the first one in Miami. Looked good for the first half, but no Marcus Smart, no Al Horford. Dante just brought up a good point. Like, how long, and believe me, I am not trying to stir the pot here, but it's a serious question. It's the NBA playoffs, and guys are missing games still because of health and safety protocols.
Yeah. Which is the NBA just making life difficult on themselves.
Because the NFL was just like, Yeah, we're good.
Well, and look, whatever side you're on, I'm not trying to stir the pot either, but if nobody else is doing it, it's silly for you to do it, right? Like, all these guys go to the grocery store and go everywhere else and live their life, and you can fly on a plane and everything else now. Go to restaurants in New York and Seattle without your card. Like, if nobody else is doing it, any walk of life, and you're still choosing to do it, you're just making life difficult on yourself for no reason because you're not doing any good.
And that's what we were kind of talking about. Like, well, how long, like, are... Like, this time next year? Because the dynamics, like, if they stay the same, COVID's still going to be COVID. Like, are you going to hold the guys out next year? Or and then something, you know, our producer Dante, like, kind of flippantly said, like, can you even, like, could Jordan have a flu game? Or do you just, like...
Not right now.
Can't happen anymore. Like, you just wouldn't be allowed to play.
Not right now. And you know what? That's kind of the situation in no matter what your line of work is, right? Like, it used to be... Hey, people took pride in, they showed up at work when they were sick.
Yeah.
You know, came in here and did this show and, you know, breathe into this microphone that somebody else was going to sit in front of for 3 hours.
That guy's got it, man.
He's tough. And now it would be like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Like, go home.
Yes.
That'll last like a year.
And then it'd be like, how come you're not here?
Right.
I got a little bit of a tickle in my throat.
I don't give a damn.
Like, what?
What?
It'll last for a little bit of a little while, but not long.
It's interesting. While we're waiting for Albert O to step up to the microphone, dude, you talk about a beef that is rare. This beef is served rare. Nick Saban against Jimbo Fisher? This is explosive.
Hey, I'm here for it. I love a good rivalry. I love animosity.
This isn't you?
I know. It's weird. Hard to believe.
this isn't like a subliminal shot. This is direct protect your neck type beef. Nick Saban gets on stage at a little panel of convention or whatever it was, and says that Texas A&M has the number one recruiting class in the country. We're second. They've bought all their players. Every single one of them.
Well, maybe they have. But that's the rules now. So my response to that is, so what? Good for them.
So Jimbo Fisher called Nick Saban despicable numerous times in a quickly assembled 9.5-minute news conference. It was assembled to fire bombs at Nick Saban. Let me give you a couple of these quotes. Quote, we've never bought anyone. No rules are broken. Nothing was done wrong. It's a shame that you've got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families at Texas A&M. Because we do things right. We're always going to do things right. We're always going to be here. We're doing a heck of a job. It's despicable that a reputable head coach can come out and say this when he doesn't get his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. It's ridiculous when he's not on top. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out a lot of things that you don't want to know. We build him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past. Or anybody's that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. It's despicable, end quote.
There's a lot there. First of all, again, I love it. I think this is great. I love a rivalry. I like when it gets personal. I think too much in sports nowadays, people are buddies, whether it's coaches, whether it's opposing players. I like it. There should be some animosity. I'm here for it. There's a beginning of that comment. I was rolling my eyes of like, come on, really? Middle of it, I was like, okay. I think he's probably right about Saban. And then at the end, he goes off the rails once again because there's a lot in there. But, yeah, I mean, do I think Texas A&M's doing it right? No. Come on, I'm not that naive. Do I think Nick Saban is now complaining because they're not able to take advantage of the rules better than everybody else? Yes, I think that's exactly what's happening. Do I think jumping into it and saying, hey, if you looked at how Nick Saban got ahead and all these the improprieties, I'm not buying that either. Nick Saban was just better at stretching the old rules than anybody else, and now Jimbo Fisher's better at stretching the new rules.
I got more quotes I'll bounce off you here in a second, but in the meantime, let's hear from Broncos tight end Albert Okwuegbunam.
I think we all respect that a lot.
Albert, what's your reaction to kind of the offseason's gone and Noah's part of the Russ trade, that means Russ is coming.
then they drafted Greg. Kind of just take us through where your head's been in
Detroit. You know, really, I saw with, you know, Noah getting traded, I mean, you know, I think it's good for him. He gets a good opportunity, you know, fresh start in Seattle. You know, I love Noah. You know, and obviously that opens up a big opportunity for me. And really, I just focus on that and just approaching every day, you know, with that opportunity and just having that the competitiveness and just trying to be the overall best tight end I can be and you know, compete for that number one role.
Yeah. With them going to more of an outside zone scheme, how does that change things for you as a blocker and kind of what are you working on in that aspect of your game?
You know, it's a little different. Just, you know, just a little difference in technique and really philosophy, like just really, you know, getting off the ball fast, you know, being super aggressive in those wide zone schemes. And that's the biggest thing, just philosophy change. But, you know, it's still to the core. You're still having the same work ethic, still doing the same drills. Just a little bit different in mindset and philosophy.
Are you seeing more 12 personnel with all the tight ends that are capable in the room?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's been a pretty big mix. You know, I wouldn't say, you know, one more than the other. It's been a pretty big mix, but there has been a lot of, you know, 12 and 21 personnel for sure.
Albert, what's it been like for you working with new tight end coach Jake Moreland? How's that process been for him coming in and obviously teaching you and a bunch of new guys?
It's been good. You know, he's a great coach, and, you know, he brings a lot of energy, which I really like, a lot of energy, enthusiasm. And, you know, he holds us to a high standard as well, and I can really appreciate that out of a coach as a player. You know, I love that coaching style when your coach kind of sets a high bar for you and holds his players accountable, and I really like that from Jake.
What are you working on the most this offseason from last year to this year?
In particular, it's hard to just pinpoint one thing. I feel like a big thing for me is just my approach and of really just, you know, grasping the offense. You know, that's one thing I really wanted to take to a whole new level this year, you know, as I'm getting older, is just, you know, having a way better grasp on our offense and defense is just slowing the game down mentally for me.
Albert, I think you recovered relatively quickly from your ACL injury. You were out there at the start of training camp last year. But as you had another year to kind of be past it, do you get the sense, looking back, that you maybe weren't quite where you are now?
Honestly, yeah, definitely. You know, after the injury, you know, rehabbing, you know, you tell yourself you're 100%. You know, I felt pretty good. But this offseason, I feel way different. You know, I feel more explosive. I'm faster. Definitely feel better than last year.
Your reaction when they drafted Dulcich? Bring it on or what?
I didn't really think too much of it. You know, I just still focused and approached it as, you know, just ready to you know, step into that number one spot and just do the best of my ability and approach every day the same.
How are every injury different, but are you surprised on where KJ is right now in his recovery, where he seems to be easy surprised?
Yeah, no, he's been doing really well, and, you know, just he's a competitor, so, you know, he tries to, you know, overstep and you know, get ahead of the process, and I think the staff's done a really good job of, you know, calming him down and you know, being patient with him, but he looks great.
Have you talked to Drew since he was drafted in Seattle?
A little bit, you know, he's like he has a really good opportunity, just like Noah. You know, I think he's really excited about that. You know, he's competing his butt off and you know, just trying to do the same thing as far as, you know, integrate himself in a new team and get the offense down. So he's been doing pretty well.
Knowing Drew kind of as you do, what was your reaction when you first heard about the trade for Russell Wilson and heard that Drew would be going to Seattle?
I mean, just like everybody, I was pretty shocked and you know, just like a trade like that, you know, just came out of nowhere. So I was pretty shocked, you know, not negatively or positively. But, you know, like I said, I'm happy for Drew. He's getting a new opportunity.
What was your reaction when the schedule came out? You have a bunch of primetime games in the first 6 weeks.
Honestly, it's really exciting. You know, the past couple of years, this is like way more primetime games that we've had, you know, going into the season. And as a player, it's really exciting. But at the same time, it doesn't take away the fact that, you know, that really means nothing, you know, without like the proper preparation and chemistry of being a great team. So, yeah, it's exciting, but, you know, it doesn't really change our approach.
Awesome. Thanks, Albert.
Yeah. All right, that was Albert Okwuegbunam at the podium. Said he wasn't really worried about the pick of Greg Dulcich out of UCLA. Do you believe him?
No. He also, I mean, he said the right things. He also didn't say it with as much confidence as he did the other answers, just me sort of listening between the lines there. He seemed a little like, okay, I'll say what I've been coached to say or I've told myself to say when I'm asked this question because I know it's coming. And it came from Kliss, and, you know, it's like, okay, kind of a, not a softball, but it's like, you know, it's coming. What did you think when they drafted him? I didn't buy that answer at all.
Anything else? Any other takeaway from Albert O there? He said he's more explosive, faster than a season ago.
Yeah, and that ties into with Quinn Meinerz. He mentioned that he'd lost 10 pounds.
Yeah, how about that?
From 330 to 320. I think it's just different with this offense, this scheme. And tight end obviously is different than line, but part of that job is blocking and in being able to move quickly and in this system, in the zone blocking system. So, you know, I think Albert O, it will still be a contributor on this offense. Like I said, I think by the end of the year, it's he and Dulcich are the two guys. I do think Dulcich is going to be more effective, but don't count Albert O out. The fact that he's, you know, is some of what he had to say there kind of had me rooting for him. The other part of it is he's still in contact with Noah and Drew, which just goes to the conversation we had. I like when you're on the opposite team, why do you have to be buddies?
Well, they're
like a little animosity.
Well, they're like real friends. They went to college together.
I don't care.
Oh, you just want him to like cut off his boy?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You're the enemy now.
Oh my God.
Talk after week one.
Oh my God. Excuse him, folks. All right. Are the Nuggets about to lose a foundational piece of their franchise over money? We'll have that conversation coming up next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Are the Nuggets about to lose a foundational piece of their franchise? Over money. Well, the real answer is we're not quite sure yet. So it only allows us to speculate. The news came out after we signed off the air yesterday. And in fact, I think you were on the air with...
Yeah, I was with Tyler on the drive.
That it was Sham Sharania's report from The Athletic that Tim Connelly is past exploratory conversations for the president of basketball here and has been with this organization for about a decade to have the same title in Minnesota. Now, the Timberwolves have a new owner. Glenn Taylor, I believe, is the name, I think. They are trying to make a full push for one of the top four, in their mind, GMs in the NBA. That is Sam Presti in Oklahoma City. That is Bob Myers with the Golden State Warriors. That is Masai Ujiri with Toronto. And that is the Denver Nuggets' Tim Connelly. Okay? There's a lot to unpack here. Josh Kroenke did not respond to request for comment. All right? Apparently, according to Mike Singer's report of the Denver Post, Tim Connelly is, quote, the most gettable, end quote, from a financial standpoint, according to a source close to the situation.
Which makes sense. I mean, I would think Sam Presti would also be gettable. Oklahoma City, like, you're not leaving a big market, right? And they're in the middle of a rebuild, and they have, like, 42 first-round picks in the next few years or whatever it is, right? But, like, that's a situation where would you maybe be looking to escape that, trying to win in Oklahoma City?
See.
Kind of like trying to win in Denver, right? Flyover City, not a big market, hard to attract free agents. Toronto and Golden State, different kind of deal. You're not looking to escape those markets.
Sam Presti's name in NBA circles is as big as any GM right now. Like, there's speculation, like, what do the Lakers have to throw at Sam Presti to get him to agree to come and try to rebuild that current dumpster fire? But here Tim Connelly is in advanced conversations. Tim Connelly, who has been truly a cornerstone for the Denver Nuggets for... And I believe, and I was talking with John Simmer a little bit about this, one of our producers here at The Fan. The two things that you need to do if you want to thrive in Denver, a non-sexy NBA market, you got to do two things, I believe, at a high level. Your draft ability and your culture creation. Tim Connelly, I think, has done both of those just to an incredible level. The first and foremost is drafting the players.
Yeah.
Because the ones that you want, when they're available, they're not coming here. History has shown us that over and over again. Or you got to overpay someone who's past their prime that no one's willing to pay.
Paul Millsap.
$90 million fully guaranteed for Paul Millsap. They gave him Kirk Cousins money.
Yeah.
So you have to draft the right players. you're not going to get it right 100% of the time. You're betting on human beings. But to get it right as often as Tim Connolly got it right, from Gary Harris, Monte Morris, being later round picks that you're like, no, those are NBA starters and you're identifying them. Bones Highland, the 26th overall pick who just yesterday got named all NBA rookie for the ninth time in Nuggets history. It just broke Jamal Murray's 3-point record as a rookie, to drafting Nikola Jokic in the second round and him being back-to-back MVPs. Even other guys like the Yusef Nurkic's, that's still an NBA starter. Malik Beasley, these are NBA starters, if not stars. So he's got that in a big check mark, but also the culture creation and drafting the right guys that can thrive in Denver and don't already have their eyes elsewhere. He has a massive check mark there too.
Yeah, no, he's done a phenomenal job. And you know, I've had a lot of people on my social media be critical of him and say, you know, he gave Michael Porter Jr. a big contract, and, you know, finding flaw with what Tim Connolly has done. And I've been critical of some things. I don't think everything he's done has been perfect. First and foremost, I think it's his commitment to his head coach, but that does speak to the culture you're talking about, right? Of like, hey, we're a family. We're all in this together. We're all going to see this thing through. Continuity. Remember a couple off seasons ago, he was preaching continuity. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about. We got our group. And so if you're going to preach that, you kind of got to live it by sticking with the head coach. So I understand why he's done it. But the core of this team, right, or what everybody thinks will be the core once they're all healthy, was the 41st overall pick, the 14th overall pick, and the 7th overall pick. And 7 sounds like a high pick. In the NBA, it's not.
It's not. And go back and look at that. I just talked about this on the Mile High Hoops podcast this morning, that go back and look at the 2016 draft. You could have easily got it wrong. Look at the four of the five picks after Jamal Murray, and even right before, like the Chris Dunns of the world.
Right.
They're just nowhere to be found.
Well, then 7th overall pick also can turn into Emmanuel Mudiay. Right.
There you go.
He hasn't hit on all of them, but you got to hit on a high enough percentage of them that you've got yourself a core. And then did they overpay for Michael Porter Jr.? Perhaps, but that's what you have to do here, is you have to give him the big contract early. It worked with Nikola Jokic. It worked with Jamal Murray. Now, he got injured, and that certainly derailed things, but they made the right decision there. And the other part of it is, fine, you don't want him to have spent that money on Michael Porter Jr. Who are they going to spend it on? Because you can't get free agents to come here. So you have to draft, and then you have to sign your guys to deals ahead of time. They did the same thing with Gary Harris.
Yeah, $80 million. Probably a little too much, but what do you guys do? Yeah.
But then they were able to parlay him into Aaron Gordon, and that filled the Jeremy Grant void. So, I mean, that's kind of how you have to play it.
And I'm glad you brought up that pivot, because the Nuggets were spurned by Jeremy Grant. The way that they responded and bringing in Aaron Gordon, who, when the other guys are healthy, in terms of a fourth option, we're saying this before. Is Will Barton like a starter on a championship team? Is Monte Morris a starting point guard on a championship team? No, those guys should be coming off the bench on an aspiration, you know, title team. Aaron Gordon was as good of a pivot in a bad situation as you can find. And that's also, I mean, Tim Connolly's got his hands all over it.
It's unfortunate, though. The Nuggets have turned into like a non-Big Five football program. They're a stepping stone. And if Tim Connolly was leaving here to go to L.A. and fix the Lakers, I would get it, right? Just like if you're a Wyoming football fan and your head coach leaves, or you're a basketball fan, right? And Jeff Linder leaves Wyoming. He's done a very nice job there. But if he leaves Wyoming to take the a Big Ten job, you'd get it. Like, deep down, it would sting.
Of course.
But you'd understand it. Like, well, we can't match that money-wise, although there's probably some oil guys up there that could help with that. But you would understand it. If he leaves to go to, it's a little bit of what was strange of Norval going from Nevada to Colorado State. Like,
but he got paid, right?
But if you're Nevada, how do you lose him to Colorado State?
No, that's a great analogy.
That doesn't make any sense.
That's a great analogy.
And that's how this feels to me, of like, Minnesota, like, what do they got that the Nuggets don't have? Well, they have ownership that values people and is willing to pay people who are really, really good at their jobs to come in there and be really, really good at their jobs. And Tim Connolly, for what he has to work with here, and we can complain about the situation all we want in terms of, well, Denver shouldn't be that way and it's not that way in the NFL. That's just the reality. That's what it is in the NBA. And he's built a team that, when they're healthy, will be a contender. I said this with Sandy last night. I think this is, I can't remember in my lifetime, a stretch where the Nuggets were considered a contender for this long a period of time. Now, it's been derailed the last couple of years by injuries. But back in the 80s, they had one good year. With Melo, they had the one year that they were truly a contender in 2009. This has been a stretch where they were the two seed. Then they went down to the bubble and went to the Western Conference Finals. They were good last year. Had they not had the injury, who knows what would happen. They got to the second round, and this year, again, the injuries. It's like, that's a four-year stretch where you can talk yourself into, hey, this is a team that's got, this team has got a shot. That's never happened with the Nuggets, ever. So to just say, ah, the guy who built that, we're fine with him leaving, is ridiculous. And how about, I mean, the Kroenkes have an uncanny knack of letting contracts expire at a bad time. I mean, TV deals, why Tim Connelly isn't just sewn up and you know he's going to be here for the next 4 or 5 years is somewhat absurd to me. So this is bad news. When the Nuggets are looking to, hey, how do we take the final step? I would want Tim Connelly making those decisions, not some new guy rolling into town or Calvin Booth getting promoted and making those decisions. Not that he can't do it or somebody new couldn't do it.
But we know this guy has done it.
Yeah, if you made me bet who's going to have more luck with it, I would say Tim Connelly.
And by the way, we didn't mention this before, there's a thought out there that the Timberwolves could give Tim Connelly ownership stake. I'll wait and see that one. I'll believe that when I see it. I know that report's out there. I'll believe that when I see it. I think this is more, hey, you're going to pay this guy top three, top four money, and right now he's 15th or 16th in the league? You're going to say no long enough, but someone's going to double your salary to do the same job, the same title. This is a move within the division.
Here's the other thing about this, too, that, you know, in a salary cap sport, you have to spend money on players. You have to. It's in the collective bargaining agreement. You know where you don't have to spend money? In your front office and your coaching staff. Nuggets have had a lot of people come and go and leave for greener pastures, because if you have coaches who are at the bottom in terms of rank in the league of what they're making, you have a GM that's at the bottom, or now he's in the middle finally of what they're making, people are going to leave. People are going to look for other opportunities, because you don't have to spend money in those positions unless you're really committed to winning. Connect the dots. Connect the dots when it comes to Kroenke.
I could not believe as many people saying, hey, this isn't that big of a deal.
That's absurd.
I am not one of them.
And I don't. I think they botched to some extent how they handled Jamal Murray. There are things to be critical of Tim Connelly. And I think all those things are fair. But to say this is not a big deal is ridiculous. I think it's a very big deal.
The Nuggets lucked out when they transitioned from Masai Ujiri to Tim Connelly.
Very much so.
It ain't a birthright that's going to happen again.
Nope. The odds are it's going to go the other way.
Correct. All right. Avs game two predictions. Can they put the Blues in an 0-2 hole? We'll give our final scores coming up next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Sack.
And everyone will be singing along, and I'll be right there with the people, James.
In a town that is in desperate need of great sports traditions, this one's going to catch on. The early victory song at Avs games. That is such a baller, arrogant move of how good, you know, it's like, we're so good, we're going to play our victory song midway through the third period.
That's pretty good.
I think it's great. We went through it yesterday with Tyler of sports traditions in this town, and there aren't enough of them. Ralphie running up at CU's probably at the top. It's at the top of the list. That's a great tradition. There's the incomplete at Broncos games, which I think is lame.
I don't love that one.
I think it's kind of weak. There's the CU fight song where they sing.
But I'll say this on a big third down incomplete. It's like when it's like in the fourth quarter and it's a resounding, but like it's a.
Yeah, but it could be anything. And at that point, it's going to be cool. There's the CU fight song where they sing, you know, the curse words at the end. That's turned into a tradition. Okay. It's a tradition because every student who comes in there, they go to, by the time they're at the first game, they know that's what they're supposed to sing.
Sure.
So you may not like it. I don't love the tradition in terms of, I don't think it's particularly classy, but it's a good tradition because it's stood the test of time. I said this yesterday. There's the tradition of CSU fans dressing up as empty seats.
Mm.
That's a big one.
Mm.
But the Nuggets don't have any.
Rocky comes with his own traditions, I think.
Yeah, it's not the same Rocky.
Yeah, but oh, right, it's his son now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's different. The Rockies, I mean, Dinger down behind home plate in the ninth inning's cool. That's great. That's a good tradition. They have so few big moments. I mean, their traditions are the June swoon.
Yeah,
it's like, theirs aren't good. But we need some, and this is a great one, of playing your victory song midway through the third period.
That's not bad, man.
I think that's great. I love it.
I'm going to be there tonight going to my fourth consecutive playoff game. Games one and two in the first round, one and two here. I'm a little bit nervous for myself because I already feel myself physically trying to catch up from Tuesday and the late start, overtime. It takes me 45 minutes to get home.
You got that job that starts at 11.
Well, I go on air at 11.
I'm just teasing you.
I work from home beforehand.
I'm just kidding you.
But next thing you know, it's like 2 o'clock before I'm like actually laying down.
It's hard to come down from it, right? You're all wired up. You were at the game. It's like, yeah, it is. It's not like the moment you get home, you're just hitting the pillow and asleep.
Right.
So, yeah, it makes for short nights. We have a little bit of a similar situation on the digital side because we're doing the post-game show. But it's also, hey, man, we're going to get to June. We're going to get to July, and there's going to be like 6 weeks before Broncos training camp, and there's not a lot going on. Like, this is burning the candle at both ends.
It's all good. I just told Tom, I'm not waking up and working construction.
Yeah, let's
enjoy it. That's right.
Let's enjoy it while we can. It is a bit of a grind, but it's about as good a grind as you're going to get.
That's about as good as grind as you're going to get. What are we in store for tonight?
I think the Avs roll tonight. I think we get the game. We get the score tonight that we should have had in game one. That game should have been 6-1, 6-2. I think that's what it's going to be tonight. I think they're going to come out. I think they're going to be flying early. I think the Blues are going to try to do what they did last game and just put, you know, kind of be real conservative. Like, okay, we're just going to, you know, try to stop this from getting out of hand here. The Avs are going to get a couple go in early. Then the Blues are going to have to attack because now you're down a couple goals. That's going to create opportunities of, you know, odd man rush. Maybe you take a penalty or two if you're the Blues that you wouldn't have otherwise. And the floodgates are going to be open. I think it's a 6-1, 6-2 game.
6-1, 6-2.
Yep.
Avs puck line and the over.
Correct.
All right.
That's the way I'm going.
All right.
You? Look at that. I know.
Look at you hosting a sports show asking me a question.
Yep, I can follow instructions.
You did first segment, last segment.
Yep.
James, you and I are synced up on this one. You know, for all the reasons that you just laid out, you know, and others, you know, just things that didn't fall the Avs way in game one. I've never watched a hockey game where I saw five different pucks ring off the post or the crossbar. We saw, you know, an empty half of a net that the puck, you know, guy just fanned on it or couldn't lift it. And I just think things break a different way tonight. And by the Blues getting up early in that game, it allowed them to play a particular type of way for the back half of that first period. Earlier in the show, I made the analogy, like, if you're in a boxing match and you know it's round 9, 10, 11, 12, and you're down on points, you gotta be a little bit aggressive and maybe come out of your style a little bit. And that's what I think the Blues are going to have to do tonight. I think they get down early, and it's going to be often, man. I'll go 5-1.
Okay.
I'll go 5-1.
That wouldn't surprise. What's the over-under tonight? Is it 6.5
probably
again?
Probably 6.5.
So slightly under, but going for the Avs to obviously cover the puck line. I can see that because I do think one of the underappreciated hero might be an overly strong term.
But 6.5 is the total.
But I thought Darcy Kuemper was good in game one. I really do. Like, think about the goals he gave up. The first one was a fluky play where Cale Makar lost the puck just trying to clear it. It gets to Ryan O'Reilly, who, you know, just kind of shows the magic of how good hockey players are with, you know, stick handling and the puck.
You used the word nifty earlier. That's perfect.
That was nifty. And I know nobody wants to root for Ryan O'Reilly, but that was a pretty amazing play. And Kuemper didn't have much of a chance on that one. And then the other goal was on a bad line change in the final seconds of a power play that he's got all this weird traffic in front of him because guys are frantically coming up trying to get onto the ice and scramble back into position. He didn't really give up a straight up goal, and he didn't. No, he didn't face 50 shots like Bennington did either. But I thought he was kind of an unsung hero the other night. So could he you know go out there and only give up one tonight? Yeah, I could see that.
All right, puck drops about 7:30. We say 7:30. We'll see. I think it was closer to 7:50. I want to say because the first game on TNT just went just a little bit long. I'll be down there. This is KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver.
You were like 2 seconds early.
With the new rules, if it's at 58:58.
Well, it was 57:58.
It was 58.
One, you're changing the rules on me. Two, that's like the first time in eight shows where I actually remembered it. I was ready to go.
I saw your eyes darting around.
I was still talking at 57:43, and I'm like, I could ramble for 17 more seconds.
You could have definitely done
that. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I think he's going to forget today. And then you jump the gun.
I'm being asked, hey, did Zach pay for his ticket? I am here to tell you that I have not used my press pass one time to go to a Colorado Avalanche game. I do use it to go to Nuggets games because I just go to so many of them. I have used it one time my first year for the Rockies, paid for my seat every single time I go. I wish I could put my money right in Dick Monfort's pocket, but they make me do it at the window first. Broncos too. There's no freebie. So when you see me there, it's because I am paying just like you are, and we'll be there. What section are we in?
You're in the twos.
220, I think.
220. Okay. 221.
So,
whatever it takes.
And you may see a larger than life man
with a large ungroomed beard that is hanging out with you. That's right.
I'm looking forward to it, man. So I just spent really the first time like a social setting, Matt and I, like going to do something with Richie and one of my boys, Tom. But you and I have never been we've done stuff away from here in terms of like hanging out, going to Pedal Columbus, hanging out with as a team. But never like gone and done something like this. So
it's gonna be awesome.
I'm pumped, man.
Oh, it's going
to
be great.
I'm really looking forward to staying at home tonight.
You could have come.
You guys,
for what it's worth,
are going to go have a good time. And, you know, that's fine. I'll just hang out.
My work status for tomorrow on the injury report is probable.
Yeah.
We'll see how it develops.
I would put you at doubtful.
We're fixing to find out.
Yeah. James and I were talking about great sports traditions in Colorado. And, you know, the greatest sports tradition of all is Stokely missing 3 days a week.
Yes.
That's exactly it.
Congrats to Cameron Stokely, his son graduating high school today. That's why Stoke's not here. He'll be back with us tomorrow.
But, hold on, I thought that was like 2 days ago. That was the senior luncheon,
apparently.
Okay. All right.
Wait a minute. So there's a luncheon on Tuesday, graduation on Thursday, and the party's on Saturday? What was supposed to be?
The party was on Saturday.
Been snowed out. It's 89 degrees today, and the party's been snowed out in 2 days.
I don't know what the deposit, what portion of the deposit the DJ gets to keep. Or the food truck.
Right.
You got to try to put the toothpaste back in the tube on that one.
But I'm all for milking. You know, hey, like a birthday, I'm a birthday week guy, not just birthday guy. But three different events for graduation?
Are you kidding? The month after high school graduation is like the best time of your life if you do it right. There's a million graduation parties, and graduation, starting from graduation week, that whole next month is
the
best.
But they're not all for you. They're going to like other people's parties.
So what? Oh, yeah. You show up and bring them a gift.
Three events?
Yeah.
Three events for graduating high school?
What did they do in your day?
I'm the only one that
pat you on the back, hand you your diploma,
get a job.
Right. It was your graduation in the morning. You had a little bit of a party in the afternoon, and then you were packing your bags and moving out in the evening.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Right. Oh my goodness. Well, you guys have fun over the next couple hours. I'll be waiting for you boys down there at the establishment.
You better be.
Yeah, I'll be down there early enough. I'll be waiting for you guys. So have fun, and we'll hopefully have some more fun tonight.
Okay.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.